Hello and welcome to the December 2022 edition of Roundabout, the Dawlish and Tynemouth area talking newspaper's monthly magazine. I'm Camilla Taylor. Firstly, it was lovely to meet up with you at the Christmas party, if you were able to join us in the Strand Hall on the 3rd of December. We hope you enjoyed the food and entertainment we laid out for you. Here is what we have in store for you in this programme. Jenny Jenkins recently met up with Father Christmas, and we will be sharing their conversation with you. Babs Astley will be reading a story she wrote for Roundabout a few years ago. Fran Frank will be sharing her driving experience with navigation by the TomTom. Stephen Taylor and Mary MacDonald will be discussing the book they have read recently. Aileen Clarkson will be sharing her letter from a dog walker. Valerie Forrester will be reading an article from the Thornbury magazine. John Townsend will be talking about the history of pantomimes, as well as giving some snippets of them. There will also be a couple of pieces of music in the programme for added entertainment. We start off with Jenny and Father Christmas.
Hello, dear listener, and a ho, 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 Merry Christmas to you at this festive season. Now, not long ago, I had the unique privilege of sharing some time with a very busy man. We had an interesting time together, as you'll hear from my recording. So, hello, and how lovely to meet you at last. And may I call you Father Christmas?
Of course, my dear. But others use St. Nicholas, Chris Kingle, or Santa Claus, but, you know, it's all the same to me.
Oh, well, it's so kind of you to allow me to talk to you through this magic modern media at this busiest time for you.
Well, it's not just now, however. Our work goes on throughout the whole year round, making sure we get enough Christmas presents ready for all the children. Prepared by my team of elves.
Oh, I say, now I have a few questions that I've always wanted to ask you. But first, may I just describe you exactly how I imagined what you'd be wearing, your beautiful red suit trimmed with white fur. But now I'm actually looking at you, it's not quite like this. What's happened?
Oh, yes. Mrs. Christmas likes to keep me looking smart. But she decided to wash it now again, my robe, and it's pale pink. In fact, everything else is pink. Even the elves have a pink glow. Them's been reading too much Barbara Cartland, methinks.
Well, there's a thought. Now, I believe your costume used to be green, is that right?
Have you heard of the Coca-Cola Company?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they decided to use my image in their advertisements. They decided red would be better, but I used the green one. I put on the green one when I go to Ireland.
Well, thank goodness you kept one. But that is a pity, but at least your beard is still as white as snow. Now, another question while I've got your ear. How do you know which little children have been good or bad?
Well, you know, Jennifer, I believe all children are good at heart. Mm. But as you may remember yourself when you were a nipper, we all get a bit silly at times. Never really naughty or bad.
Well, I'm going to keep my past to myself. And here's another question. How do you know which presents should go to which child?
Well, that's a good question. We try to give every little child the presents that he or she will know that's been given with love, chosen and given with love. I think that's the thing.
Oh, well, you see that on all the presents with lots of kisses on the labels, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Now, I'm looking at you and I cannot imagine the answer to my question. How old are you?
Oh, that's very cheeky, Jennifer. I'm going to say I'm as old as I look.
Oh, well, a wonderful answer. But looking at you, You've got a wonderful complexion in this snowy weather, so I think you're still 21.
Roundabout.
Now, going back to your elves, what do you give them for Christmas?
Yeah, it's another good question. Because them work so hard and they deserve a holiday until the new year starts, at any rate. So I give them as much Christmas pudding as they can eat.
Well, not very generous, are you?
No.
Now, let's talk about your favourite animals, the reindeer.
Yes.
Who looks after them?
Well, as you know, Jennifer, them be wild animals. But every December, they come here knowing they have a special job, a really special job to do with me, and particularly on Christmas Eve.
Well, of course they do. And isn't it wonderful that they turn up so regularly every December? Now, I'm curious about their names. How did they get their names?
Well, there are 8 reindeer.
Oh, yes.
And I actually, you know, I saw the names in a poem I read once when I was very young, knee-high to a grasshopper. Now, I have difficulty remembering them all these days, but can I try?
Go on, then.
Okay, Jennifer. There's Dasher.
Yes.
Dancer.
Yes.
Prancer. They them rhymes, you see.
Well, they do.
Vixen. Comet. Cupid. Donna and Blitzen.
Ah.
Rudolph. The red-nosed misfit, you've heard of him, haven't you?
Well, yes, but not in association with your team of reindeers.
No, absolutely not. He wasn't one of mine, you know.
He wasn't?
He wasn't one of mine. But, well, you know, being Christmas, I've kind of adopted him, Jennifer.
And do the others like him?
Oh, they get on well together. They didn't at first, mind, but now all's well. All's good.
Oh, dear. I can imagine them feeling a bit jealous of his red nose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very distinctive.
And they've got these wonderful antlers. I should think you could put decorations on them if they stand still long enough, couldn't you, for Christmas?
I do. I do. And lights.
Now, another thing that we always did when our children were little, we left out some treats for you so that you'd find them at the edge of the mantelpiece by the fireplace.
Oh, yes. I love the mince pies. I put on too many calories when I eat them, you know, my dear. But and my reindeer, though, they're more health conscious, you know. They really enjoy the carrots. And sometimes, dare I admit it, Jennifer, I have a glass of sherry left out too.
Really?
And Montelado, perhaps.
Oh, yummy, yummy.
And do you know what? I call this Santa's special sledge slurp.
You nearly couldn't say that, could you, Santa?
I had a wee dram before I came here today.
Oh, that's why you've got that rosy pink glow. Now, a little more serious question next. It was actually a young friend of mine said, why do you use reindeers and not other animals? And because his mummy is blind, he said, why don't you use guide dogs?
Ah, oh, that's a very good question. Mm. I love dogs. I love all animals. Everybody loves a lot of animals. But I believe particularly that guide dogs have an important job to do, especially at this time of the year. Mm-hmm. And that really they deserve to be with their owner, and their owner deserves to be with them.
Yes.
So that's where they should be, especially a Christmas, of course.
That's an obvious answer. Thank you very much. Still more questions to come.
Of course.
Well, what do you do during the rest of the year?
Well, December the 24th is the climax of all the work we do throughout the year. So I'm making toys and working hard in my workshop with the elves. So it's a constant theme of work throughout the year.
Goodness me. Well, that's got the work out of the way. But I've often wondered, do you and Mother Christmas have any children of your own?
Well, that's another good question. Me and Mother Christmas, you know, Jennifer, we loves all the children. And we're here to give them all a joyful and a happy Christmas. That's our way. And if we do that, that's wonderful for us.
Well, that's lovely as well. Lovely thought. Here's a funny question. It's rather related to a Christmassy song. Have you ever been stuck up a chimney?
Oh, yes. A bit embarrassing, that, Jenny. But I'd rather not remember it. It was a very city experience in Acne. But it made all the elves laugh. Or they didn't laugh.
I think you could have called it a sooty experience, couldn't you?
Oh, you're a wag.
Sorry. Jennifer. Well, you could blame it on the mince pies, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Now, talking of your much beloved Mother Christmas, what do you give her for Christmas as a present?
I tries to think of something that would be a real surprise for her. You know, because Christmas should always be a time of giving with love, and I loves Mother Christmas. You know, love, and to bring her joy, no matter how small, it's the thought that counts. And this year I thought I might get her a mangle.
Oh, I'm sure she'll be thrilled with it. I'm not going to add any more comments to that. I want to thank you so much for giving us your time today. And finally, I'd like to ask you for your choice of music and the reason why you selected it.
What are you two doing in there? It's time you came out here, Father Christmas, and give the elves a hand. They're causing me a headache, and I think they're threatening to go on strike.
Oh, my goodness, Jennifer. I'd better go and sort this out, or Christmas could be a a huge disappointment this year for a lot of youngsters.
Oh, but I'm so sorry you're in trouble with Mother Christmas, but please tell us your choice of music and why you chose it.
Well, I thought long and hard about this, and I mean very musical, Jennifer, and I've chosen, because it's always been a great favourite of mine since when I was very small, I chose Jingle Bells.
Oh,
because, I think you know that I'm a rather jingly, effervescent kind of person, and Jingle Bells would suit me just fine.
Oh, well, that's lovely. Now, I'd better let you go to get peace with Mother Christmas and help her out. So thank you for that. We have to leave you to get on with your work. But thank you very much for sharing the insight into your life. And may your Christmas bells keep jingling. So we say goodbye.
And a very happy Christmas to you.
Thank you.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. What fun to ride and sing in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Br-ra-ra-ra-rip. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. Oh, what fun to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Oh, we have a lot of fun. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Thank you, Father Christmas, for taking time out from your busy schedule to have a chat with Jenny Jenkins. That song was Jingle Bells by Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters. Here's a joke for you. Where does Father Christmas stay when he goes on holiday? He stays at the Ho Ho Hotel. We now have Babs Astley with her story, The Christmas Messenger. This story also has guest appearances from John Townsend and the late Jonathan Webster.
It was Christmas Eve, and Angela was feeling happy. She had been to the market and had picked up a lot of last-minute bargains and was looking forward to getting home and putting her feet up with a cuppa before sorting everything out ready for the next day. It was cold but dry and sunny, and there was still the possibility of snow, which the children would love. The youngest ones had never seen snow, and the prospect of them waking up on Christmas morning to a white carpet outside was a magical one. She decided to walk home through the park, and there were still plenty of people about, although most were hurrying along, obviously eager to get home to start the celebrations. As she walked along, she admired the many trees that were scattered around and lining the path. The beautiful red dogwood, whose trunks and bark really was a deep pinky red, in contrast with the white-barked silver birch, whose trunks glistened in the sun. Then there was her favourite monkey puzzle tree, with its deep green spiky leaves. However, she hadn't got time today to stop and admire these lovely gifts of nature. She had gifts in her bag that she needed to get home to wrap. A little further along the path, she spied an elderly couple that she knew lived further down her road, sitting on a bench, and she stopped to wish them a happy Christmas and inquire after their health and that of their children and many grandchildren. Having satisfied herself that all was well with them, she continued down the path towards the gate, and as she got nearer to the exit of the park, she was suddenly knocked off her feet and looked up to see a hooded youth on a skateboard racing away with her precious bag of goodies. She lay there for a moment feeling stunned and perplexed, and when she raised her head again, a man with white hair and very blue eyes, wearing a silver-grey suit, was standing there holding out his hand. He bent down and gently lifted her to her feet and helped her to stagger to the nearest bench. He smiled and said,
"I don't think there are any broken bones, but you are probably suffering from shock. Would you like me to take you to the casualty department just to get yourself checked out? The boy who mugged you has got away, but something tells me there's still hope. It's never too late to see the light."
Angela looked up at him and said shakily, "That's very kind of you, but I'm okay, and I know how busy that department will be, especially today. You have been more than helpful. I'm Angela, by the way. What's your name?"
"I'm Gabriel. Would you like me to escort you home?"
Angela smiled gratefully and noticed the elderly couple she had stopped to talk to earlier were hurrying down the path towards her. "Thank you again," she said, "but those are my neighbours coming towards us, and I can go home with them. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas. You deserve it." She turned to the couple who had arrived at her bench and were looking down at her in concern. "Are you all right, dear?" said Mrs. Berry. "We saw that awful boy knock you over, but we couldn't get to you any quicker to help you." Angela smiled at her and said, "Well, I was lucky that kind Gabriel here came to my rescue." The Berries looked puzzled.
"Oh, dear, there's no one here, love."
Angela spun round to find that Gabriel was no longer there. That's strange, she said. He was here a second ago.
There now, dear. There was nobody here. You must have hit your head and got a bit confused.
Angela opened her mouth to insist that Gabriel had been there and she hadn't hit her head. But something stopped her, and she just nodded and said, "Yes, that must be it. But would you mind if I walk home with you?"
"No, of course you must, and we'll walk you to your door, love,"
said a gallant Mr. Berry. So with Mrs. Berry on one side of her and Mr. Berry on the other, the three made their way slowly back to Angela's house, where the kind couple made sure she was safely in the house before they trotted off down the road to their own cosy home. Her mother, who had been looking after the children, was very keen to hear what had happened, and later, after she had gone home and the children were in bed, she settled down with her husband and told him the whole story. He was as concerned as the Berrys had been that she might have hit her head, but Angela knew that she hadn't and was happy to say no more about the incident. As they watched the news on TV later that evening, they were amazed at one of the stories being reported.
Local police reported that earlier today, a hooded youth on a skateboard had come by the police station and handed in a large bag of shopping. The boy confessed that he had taken it from a lady in the park and was truly sorry. By this time, he was trembling and genuinely remorseful, and after taking down his details, the police sent him away with a warning. Police are asking anyone who saw the incident to come forward, and if the lady concerned is watching, her bag of shopping is waiting for her at the police station, apparently with all its contents intact.
Angela looked at her husband and smiled. Gabriel was right, wasn't he, Mike? He smiled back, and leaving Angela to mind the children, set off to the police station to collect the bag. After Mike told the duty sergeant the story his wife had told him, the policeman wrote down her details.
Angela. In that case, this Christmas card must be for her. Someone left it on the counter with her name on the envelope. There are no Angelas round here, so you may as well take it, as well as the bag.
He handed them over. The envelope was unsealed, so Mike looked inside to see a shiny gold card of a Christmas angel with just 7 words written inside. To Angela, good news indeed, from Gabriel. Mike looked up totally speechless as the sergeant smiled and said,
"Well, it is Christmas after all, and perhaps miracles really do happen."
That was a very interesting story with a message for all of us. Are you ready for another joke? What did the bright Christmas tree say to the dull Christmas tree? Lighten up!
Hello, Fran Frank here. Have you ever travelled in a vehicle with a sat-nav system that talks? My husband and I travelled around the UK for years without the need of a sat-nav by using our own local knowledge or by referring to traditional road maps. However, a few years ago, our travelling needs changed and we decided that a sat-nav might prove useful for those smaller venues that didn't always appear on the road maps. Church halls, community centres and sports fields in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, we decided to treat ourselves to one of the many sat-navs on the market. Having checked the options, we settled on a TomTom, which provided basic instructions without being too intrusive, or so we thought. However, before our next journey, we did remember to pack our trusted copy of the AA roadmaps in the glove box. An example of when this came into its own was during a journey to the Bristol area, when Tom managed to trap us in a small village in Somerset by telling us repeatedly to turn left at the next junction. Turn left at the next junction. Followed very quickly by Tom's voice telling us to turn around when possible. And then turn right at the next junction. My husband immediately stopped the car, unplugged Tom, and pointed to the glove box. Once I pinpointed our location on the road map, we discovered we were in the wrong village and a long way from our intended destination. On a visit to Staffordshire a few weeks later, we followed Tom's instructions until he told us to turn left at the next junction and announced in a very positive voice, "You have reached your destination." "No, we haven't," we both shouted. The narrow lane where we had stopped had waist-high grass and weeds growing down the centre of the track and hadn't been used by vehicles for years. So we ignored Tom. We reversed back to the main road and resorted to the AA road maps for the remaining 2 miles of the journey. Another day, when we lost patience with Tom, we had to admit afterwards that it probably wasn't his fault. We typed the required postcode into Tom's memory and followed his instructions until we reached a point when he again claimed that we had arrived at our destination. The venue we were looking for was a rather large community centre located in the middle of a town. As you may already have worked out, the postcode covered a number of buildings in the town where we were going, and although Tom was actually correct in where he had guided us, which was evident because we could see the roof of the building, he and we were unaware of a new terrace of houses which had recently been built directly in front of the community centre. It did take us quite a while to work out exactly how we could get from our position to the community centre's car park without sprouting wings, but we eventually managed it and arrived just in time for our appointment. As a result of these and a number of other frustrating journeys with Tom, we have now decided to leave Tom at home and rely either on our own knowledge of the area or to the good old-fashioned road maps. If that doesn't work, then we ask a human being, as long as they are not called Tom.
Ha ha! Well, Fran, wait till self-drive cars become prevalent on the roads. Here's another joke for you. What did one cranberry say to another at Christmas? "'Tis the season to be jelly!" Stephen Taylor and Mary MacDonald have been reading Anthony Trollope's short story Christmas at Thompson Hall and are here to review it. This book is available in hardcover, paperback, and as a downloadable audiobook.
This month, Mary and I have been reading a short story by Anthony Trollope, so 150 years old, and it's called Christmas at Thompson Hall. Now, if I was to say that, you might think this was going to be a cosy story, and wealthy family all gathered together having Christmas. Well, it kind of finishes like that, but it's not at all like that, is it?
It's quite an adventure, really. A lady of certain means, comfortable enough to travel with her husband, whether he likes it or not, and she decides that she will go to Paris. Unfortunately, she has a deadline to be back at the house, the family house, for a big family Christmas. It sounds more splendid than it is, but that's the plan. And as we all know, the best laid schemes. And I've seen Paris. That's when it all goes wrong. Her husband, dear man, decides that he's going to be ill. He'll never make it back. And she decides to treat him in the good old-fashioned way of the century, a plaster on his chest, a mustard plaster, no less. So that's the basis of this exciting adventure.
It's It falls into that category of you couldn't really make this up, but he has. Presumably he made it up. It's not based on a real situation. So, yes, it's a couple, I guess they're in their 30s, aren't they? And they are staying in a hotel in Paris, and they are going to return to England for Christmas. While in the hotel, a big mistake occurs. We can't say too much about it, but the wife makes a mistake of judgment, and it's very funny, and also it's just entertaining. It's a light and enjoyable read, and it all sorts itself out in the end. But
it's
a plot twist.
It's a bit like a farce, isn't it? Yeah. It's absolutely like a farce, because it's the tiny mistake, and I will say it, a room number, which is the basis of a lot of farce that we've seen over the years, and that mistake leads to her adventure. But it's all those tiny little nuances of behaviour and thought, and the fact that you are listening to this lady's thoughts and the patterns she goes through to try and work out how to deal with it all, and the view she has of various people who see her or who might see her, and how she can talk about it afterwards or not.
She didn't really tell a lie, but she misleads in order to cover up her mistake, and that just leads to more and more, and she has to dig deeper and deeper, and it's very amusing.
It is, and of course the happy ending, which it's got to have. I think one of the points of these stories by Trollope is that there is a sort of moral and happy ending, but the outcome is they do make it to their intended huge family do, and there's pressure there, you see. I think that adds to it, that the poor woman is under pressure because the head of the family has summoned them all. They must be there, and she feels the great need, despite the husband's views, that she must make the effort. Tomorrow will not do. They cannot take a later train or a later boat. Tomorrow must be the day they're there.
That's right. Now, earlier we were talking, and you said that you thought that it was very dated, and that it was the manners of the past, and you enjoyed reading it because of the sort of historical interest.
Yes.
And that's certainly true. But I also think with Trollope, it's, you can identify with these characters. There's a modernity about them and the way they talk to each other. He takes you into people's bedrooms in this case, which wouldn't have been something Jane Austen would have done.
No, not at all.
Earlier in the century. Oh, no. So there is a more contemporary feel to this, I thought.
I don't think dated is quite it. Of its time. It's the language and the thinking and the secrecy and the manufacturing of hugeness, of smallness, which we all do. We all make a mountain out of a molehill when we're stressed. And this poor lady, God bless her, is so stressed.
It's a lovely little story. A bit quirky, entertaining, very funny at times. And it's very widely available as an audio. You can get it on YouTube totally free. There's no need to download it or anything like that. It's very well known and widely available.
And it is funny. That's the thing. It is, even to the very end, which is, in, you know, as he intended, a humorous, happy ending. Right to the end, it's humorous.
We now have Aileen with her letter from a dog walker. Honey Bear behaved so well at the Christmas party.
Dear listener, recent higher than usual temperatures, coupled with prolonged dampness, have confused vegetation into producing new growth. My lawn, with its many weeds, turned into a green jungle, and Honey Bear was in danger of getting lost whenever she ventured outside. Yesterday, Gary, my helpful gardener, decided strimming would be the best solution, and I plan to give it a finishing cut with the lawnmower later this week if the ground becomes drier underfoot. At the end of October, Honey Bear and I went to St. Ives for a holiday, accompanied by our friend and yellow team member, Barbara. When train strikes were forecast, we made an early decision to travel by car. This was a mixed blessing. Yes, we had our own transport, but we also had lots of space to carry almost anything we thought we might need. Our large apartment was on the second floor of the modernised Victorian house where Honey Bear and I stayed last year. This elevated position gave us an even better panoramic view of Porthmeyer Beach, the area called the Island with the tiny St. Nicholas Chapel, and of St. Ives Town and Harbour. From our kitchen we had access to a large private outdoor patio, which must be a sun trap in the summer, but was too draughty to sit outside in the last week of October. From the front gate, two descending footpaths led to Porthmeyer Beach and to Fore Street and the harbour. Every day started with an early walk down the path to the beach for Honey Bear to meet and play with lots of dogs on the bright, clean, golden sand, then up to the grass-covered island before returning to the Porthmeyer Beach Cafe, where Barbara and I enjoyed breakfast and Honey went to sleep under the table. On several days after breakfast, we walked to the town centre to do a bit of shopping, post a few cards, and drink coffee. Many pubs and restaurants were happy to welcome a well-behaved dog, and so we tended to have our main meal in the middle of the day. Honey Bear went everywhere with us, and even took the open-top bus to Penzance and walked along the promenade to Newlyn for lunch, followed by a visit to dog-friendly Newlyn Art Gallery. Evening snacks and milk were available from nearby Norway stores. Barbara enjoyed a solid solo visit to the recently enlarged Tate Gallery and the Barbara Hepworth Museum and Garden. Together we wandered around the dog-friendly Penwith Art Gallery, which showcases and sells varied and quite expensive works by local artists. On the one day we had rain, we had driven to Marazine for lunch at the Godolphin Hotel overlooking St. Michael's Mount. It was raining, and when we left St. Ives, it was raining. When we parked the car beside the hotel, it was raining. Our view of the mount was marred by heavy rain, but the welcome we received and the mussels we ate made the trip worthwhile. However, the real rain arrived on our journey back to St. Ives, when we drove through a deluge of water, flooding roads and reducing visibility. My little red car, which is relatively high up off the ground, met the challenge with flying colours. To sum up our week, we ate well and saw and did lots of new things. All three of us probably returned a little fitter than when we arrived. We were warm and slept well and watched very little television. Our homeward journey was on a beautiful, sunny, late autumn day with light traffic door to door. When you receive this letter, it will be December. For some time the shops have been full of festive goodies and town centre Christmas decorations are up and lights have been lit. Dawlish and Tynmouth have held their Christmas markets, and Honey Bear and I enjoyed strolling through Dawlish stalls, where all manner of foods and gifts were on offer. I have always loved Christmas, and we will have our tree in the hall with the usual decorations to please the eye, and scented cinnamon sticks scattered around to please the nose. but now it is time to sit down with a cup of tea and think about writing our cards. Kindest regards, the dog walker.
We're off to the country of Iceland with the adventures of Lorraine and her friend Gilly Pugsley.
The continuing story of Two Blondes and a Spoon to Iceland by Gilly Pugsley. Chapter 2 continued. The Aurora Borealis. Hurrah! We have arrived at Perlon, the Viking Museum. Inside, we're met by a most charming Icelander. He takes our entrance fee and gives us headphones for the museum. Turns out he's played golf in North Devon. Somewhere very windy. He's not only the attendant, but also the director and creator of All Inside. Fantastic life-size models in plaster of Paris of most of his family and friends. We watch a video of them being made. We also learn a lot about the Vikings and realise why they're not the blue-eyed blondes we thought they would be. Apparently, on their way to Iceland, they detoured to run amok in Ireland and capture many women. I'm not sure about capture, more like captivate, really. A big blonde hunk of a Viking against Patrick and Seamus? No contest. Hence, 95% of Icelandic women have Irish genes. They are slim, attractive, fine-featured, brown hair, rather like Bjork. We leave for the return bus and find we have a 15-minute wait, so decide to forfeit another meeting with Happy Harrick, the bus driver, and walk back. At 3 o'clock, weary from walking, the Democratic vote was in favour of a snooze before the Northern Light trip. Lorraine retired to the room while I went on a dubious expedition in search of an ATM. I returned triumphant to a freezing cold room. Lorraine was fully booted and spurred, snoring peacefully in pink balaclava and gloves under the duvet. I took to my cot and joined her in the fabled land of Nod. But we awoke at 5 and down 2 or 3-ish, large-ish, gins, dressed and checked with reception that the trip was on. All systems go, hurrah! We were to leave at 7:30. Our search for a restaurant serving something more Icelandic than burger and chips was the least successful episode of our first full day on this enigmatic island, and after half an hour's fruitless search, panic set in. We made for the supermarket, our old haunt of drunkenness and debauchery. Here, we constructed our own exotic takeaway of olives, water biscuits, Icelandic cheese, and chokkibikkis. Consumed back in the room and washed down with copious quantities of the industrial strength. Number 13 got a tad overexcited and jumped handle first into the cheese. At 7:15 we checked in at reception. Only to be told our tour operator doesn't leave till 8:30. So it was that we found ourselves back in the room. More refreshments.
At 8:30, we board the coach more than a little excitedly. This is really what the trip's about, the Aurora Borealis. And I'm in the window seat. Again. We can hardly contain ourselves. Lorraine is squeaking incoherently. Luckily, the sky's clearing and the driver and guide will follow the windows in the firmament. After about an hour, we find ourselves in the national park. As if magically switched on for our enjoyment, the lights begin about 5 minutes later. We are the only coach here. The lights are subtle to start with, a gentle blue-green misty pastel undulation. But through the guide's super-duper telescopic camera, the scale goes from amazing through stunning to outrageous. Just to be in Iceland, in the dark, watching the northern lights with my busy mate. Perfect. After about an hour, they crescendo into something like a green water spout. Oh, that's me. Ah, that's Lorraine. Yeah. I think she's from Yorkshire. We depart a happy coach load, and the guide has kindly offered to email us his photos. Oh, wow! We alight from the bus and realise we're quite a distance from our hotel. It's dark and the only lights are on the massive church. It's a marvellous landmark and would be a great guide to navigation, but Reykjavik seems to turn on its axis and it takes us quite a while to find our way back. Could it be the magnetic forces of nature? The northern lights? The djinn? However, we feel perfectly safe here. We finally locate the Hotel Lifa Ericsson, though I'm sure it's not where it used to be. We bid the porter good night, and after one more gin and a chocolate biscuit, hick the sack. Exhausted. Hurrah! To be continued.
With the freezing temperatures this month, I bet Lorraine and Gilly feel as if they're back in Iceland. On that note, what do you call an old snowman? A puddle! Anybody for cake? Valerie has an article about a unique recipe for a cake. A scripture cake.
Hello, I'm recording an article by Jane Marks, which appears in the Thornbury monthly magazine. Back in 2020, when COVID first struck, the lockdown and all its restrictions inspired many of us to get around to having a good spring clean and attend to all those boxes and piles of things put away to be sorted, rehomed or disposed of when we had more time. Many things may have emerged to the cries of, "Oh, I wondered where that was," or "I'd forgotten I had that." For me, Jane Marks, it was a small book that came to the surface, no more than 7 by 5 inches, a little grubby, and certainly well used. It had belonged to my grandmother, Sarah Squire, who had written her name and Dawlish address on the front page. It was the 8th edition of Practical Cookery by Amy Atkinson and Grace Holyrood, published by Nutt & Co. Leeds in 1919, and priced at 2 shillings. That's just over £3 today. It describes itself as a collection of reliable recipes, with everything from jugged hare to stewed tripe, pigeon pie to stuffed leg of mutton, cabinet pudding to cornflour buns, and some recipes we may well associate more with contemporary cuisine, cheesecakes and risotto, cauliflower au gratin, and fricassee of chicken came as somewhat of a surprise. But the one that stood out as something a little out of the ordinary was in the cake section, scripture cake. The recipe for this was frequently found in Victorian publications and posed somewhat of a puzzle for the cook. The recipe was identified only by Bible references and was often used to instruct young girls in Sunday school, both in baking and in Bible studies. 4.5 cups of Kings, chapter 4, verses 22, referred to flour. 1.5 cups of Judges, verse 25, was butter, and so on, through 12 ingredients, the last of which being rather a dubious reference in Amos 4, verse 5, for 3 teaspoons of baking powder. At the end of the recipe in this old cookery book, it states, "Follow Solomon's prescription for the making of a good boy, and you will have a very good cake." Proverbs 23, verse 14. Many believe the idea originated in America, and indeed the first known commercially printed version did appear there in 1897. But the concept of scripture, or Bible, cake was certainly known in England in the late 1700s. The cake was often made for special occasions such as Christmas, Easter, and weddings, and was very popular in the 1800s. Both here and in America. I have no idea if Sarah ever made this particular cake, but she was always thought of as a fine cook, feeding her family of 5 strapping Devonshire sons. Bye for now.
That reminds me, why doesn't Father Christmas eat junk food? Because it's bad for his elf. I can just about hear John Townsend saying, "Leave the elf alone. He's in my panto."
Yes, it wouldn't be Christmas without a pantomime. Well, according to some. 'Tis the season to be silly. Oh, yes, it is. Once more, the British population is divided between those who love panto and those who avoid it like soggy sprouts. Our taste for pantomimes is a bit like Marmite, isn't it? It's a black and white subject which you either heartily applaud or boo from afar. The annual panto ritual is either seen as silly, vulgar nonsense with little theatrical merit, or it's a delicious excuse for all the family to escape their woes for a good giggle, sing-along and shout at the villain. Therapy or ignominy, take your choice. So when did this traditional Christmas entertainment start? Time for a quick dose of history. Today's pantomimes were influenced by a traditional type of theatre known as commedia dell'arte, a genre originating in Renaissance Italy. Beginning in the 16th century in Venice, it was popular amongst royals and commoners alike. Meanwhile, in Britain from the Middle Ages, traditional English folk plays, called mummers' plays, were performed by travelling players, especially around Christmas. These contained many pantomime elements of stage fights, risque humour, weird creatures, gender role reversal, and the obligatory good defeating evil, with a happy ending. So, a hybrid blend of flamboyant Italian drama and English costume plays, where only males performed the parts, developed into an early form of pantomime. In the first two decades of the 18th century, competing London theatres, Lincoln's Inn Fields and the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane, presented productions that began seriously with classical stories that contained elements of opera and ballet and ended with a comic night scene with frights and ghosts. And then by the 1800s, children were regularly going to the theatres in the Christmas holiday to watch the craziness of the harlequinade chase scene, the most exciting part of the panto because it included spectacular magic as well as slapstick comedy, dancing and acrobatics. Popular Victorian pantomimes included cheery songs, jokes, messy slapstick, dancing, special effects, gender-crossing actors, topical humour with stories loosely based on well-known fairy tales, fables or folk tales, in fact just like today, and a big draw would be a famous performer in the lead role, being cheered on by a lively audience encouraged to sing and shout. Oh yes they were! Needless to say, visitors from abroad are often totally baffled by all the utter nonsense of this uniquely British entertainment. So should you be tempted to join in the panto fun this season, here are a few of the local productions on offer in chronological order. Aladdin is currently on at the Prince's Theatre in Torquay. That was from the 9th of December and it goes through to the 31st. Cinderella is on at the Exeter Corn Exchange from the 17th of December to the 2nd of January. And Sleeping Beauty is at the Barnfield Theatre in Exeter from the 22nd of December to the 7th of January. But there is a Sleeping Beauty closer to home, at Pavilions Tynmouth, from the 28th of December to the 2nd of January, performed by the ever-popular Tynmouth Players. Robin Hood is on at the Exeter Northcote Theatre, that's on from now to the 7th of January, but Robin Hood is closer to home too, at the Shaftesbury Theatre in Dawlish, from the 6th of January to the 14th. And although I say it myself, watch out for the scariest Sheriff of Nottingham, played by myself. Yeah, there's nothing quite like being an evil tyrant at the start of January. At least the new year can only get better. And then, finally, there's Robinson Crusoe, also at Pavilions Tynmouth. That's from the 25th to the 29th of January, brought to us by the splendid Sheldon Players. So, plenty of choice on our doorsteps. I dare anyone to watch them all. Ah well, to get us in the mood for the usual dreadful puns, let me try another stab at being a dame. I can only apologise for what follows. Hello, boys and girls! Oh, I'm feeling terrible. I've just had a stair lift fitted in my castle. It's so noisy, it's driving me up the wall. Anyway, what do you think of my lovely new frock? Every time I'm down in the dumps, I buy myself a new dress. Yes, to cheer me up. Well, I always wondered where you got them from. Oh, really, Buttons? Oh, don't you think this dress hugs my figure nicely? Well, not so much hugs as throttles. It looks like your diet didn't last, and I see you haven't given up mince pies this year. Oh, I'll have you know, a recent study shows women who carry a little extra weight live longer than men who keep mentioning it.
As a matter of fact, I read on Twitter about the dangers of sugar, so I've now given up.
Oh, you've given up eating sugar?
No, reading Twitter. Did you know jokes about sugar are very rare?
Well, jokes about brown sugar, demerara.
Oh, someone paid me a lovely compliment today, you know. They admired my driving. They left a little note on my windscreen. How sweet of them. It said, parking fine. Oh, wasn't that kind of them? I always like to park on those pretty yellow lines outside the wizard's cave. Mind you, he threatened to cast a spell to turn me into a prawn cocktail. He said that was just for starters.
Ah, well, I tried to get us in the mood. But come mid-January, I fear what they'll say about my pantomime career, and no doubt my future at Roundabout.
Behind you! Behind you!
He is wishing you and your loved ones a very happy Christmas and a new year. We will be back with Roundabout in January 2023. Our final piece of music is Candlelight Carol, composed and conducted by John Rutter and sung by the Cambridge Singers.
Thank you.
Our thanks go to Jenny Jenkins, David Quay, a.k.a. Father Christmas, Babs Astley, Fran Frank, Stephen Taylor, Mary MacDonald, Aileen Clarkson, Lorraine Ferguson, Valerie Forrester, and John Townsend. Thanks also to Diana Coulson and Margaret Reynolds for copying and dispatching the USB sticks, and to Sarah Williams for uploading the programme to our website. The programme was compiled and produced by Camilla Taylor and edited by Stephen Taylor and Mike Smith.